Hi, it's Alan. We're celebrating Pete here. You know, there can't be enough said as far as I'm concerned. You know, each person in life has a hero or several heroes. Pete was mine, always was, and I didn't have a second. So let's go and listen to what you have to say. And let's go to Matthew in D.C. Well, Matthew just seems to have gone out. So we'll go to Diana. Okay, Diana, you're on.
I'm here. This is Diana.
Indeed you are. Go ahead. What you got?
I want you to know, in the hills of Western Massachusetts, my husband made banjos 30 years ago. Pete turned up locally at a hearing about a power plant going green, quote unquote, green. My husband, Mark, went out to my van and then came back and gave Pete his own personal banjo. Pete then played Someone's in the Kitchen with Dinah. I'm Diana. I think he played on the Dinah part.
That's
to
great.
Our baby who was not yet hatched. I'll never forget it.
You know, Diana, there was a very famous guitar maker in New York City. And he had a sort of place on the Upper West Side, which is where I grew up. And I don't want to use his name because who needs it? But the guy was there. Pete came in, and he told me a story that I'll never forget. And that was that that Pete came in, and the guy said to him, the guitar maker, because he had repaired something for Pete, Pete, you get a discount. And Pete looked at this guy, and he said to him, I don't want any discount, but the next kid who comes in here with nothing, give him the discount. How's that? Isn't that a great story?
Perfect.
Isn't that a great story? And the interesting thing was that the guy told the story on himself.
Yes, but Pete was able to accept a gift when he thought it made sense.
Sure.
And that is a gift from him to us. He was a major gift giver.
Oh, boy. Was he ever. Was he
still
ever.
Is.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you sad?
No, I'm in high glee. I'm sad if his family is sad. He is terribly urgent to the world.
You know, everybody's got something to say about this. One of the people who called me earlier today said it would be great. I'm going to tell you who it was. It was Mike Maripol. You know him. He's a regular commentator here on WAMC and a wonderful guy. He says the White House should be besieged with calls asking for a moment of silence at the State of the Union for Pete. Isn't that interesting? And I know a lot of people got together and argued, sent a lot of letters to the Nobel Prize Committee saying that if anybody in this world deserved the Nobel Peace Prize, it was Pete. Hey, Diana, I'm going to let you go because we have a very...
Let me tell you one thing.
Sure,
real
please.
Fast. I called the White House. I could not find a user-friendly person.
Right.
But I got you, so thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, dear. Appreciate it. Okay. On the line with us now, the great Peter Yarrow, is a guy who, Peter, Paul, and Mary, and has been on this station many times and who we love. Peter, welcome.
It's good to be with you and talking about Pete. I was with him yesterday at the hospital.
No kidding.
And singing with others for a long time, and it was a great privilege. And that was what Pete wanted, and so today is fully occupied with thinking about Pete and celebrating his life and mourning his passing and recommitting to carrying it on, of course.
You were with Pete for, I remember because we were there, for Toshi's memorial service.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that day? Because, you know, it was really quite something.
Well, as I said, from the stage, we were at the... As you remember, we were at the auditorium at
Ethical Culture. Ethical culture.
Pardon me?
It was the Ethical Culture School, right?
Right. We were, that's right, Ethical Culture Society, where yeah. I actually grew up. And that was my mother's choice for a perspective on worship for me. And so, and I'd done concerts there. And I told the audience before I sang that what was so remarkable about the event that day, and I'd been sitting there, you know, watching all the speeches and all the tributes and the performances, were that you really got the sense that the life that they lived was accessible to anybody who, unless they were living in dire need, could share. Where what was important was people you loved and what you believed in and your family, and there was no privilege in that home in the sense that they lived humbly and simply with their Pete would go out and chop wood. He loved carrying the wood and chopping the wood, and he built the original small house, you know, mm-hmm. himself personally, and you know, all those songs, all that income, except for what they needed, which was a very small amount, that all went to the sloop and other things that Pete was supporting.
NWAMC, by the way, they were incredibly generous with us.
Yeah, well, of course, but it was more than generosity. It was, you know, a way of life. It was, you know,
yeah.
It was everything, and it kind of that gathering with Toshi exploded the myth that, oh, here are stars and here they're living special privileged lives, and what they can enjoy in life is not accessible to others. Whether with Pete that and Toshi, that was not the case. They absolutely lived their ethic fully and totally, and I think that was one of the things that gave them, both of them, and they were both remarkable, remarkable people, extraordinary strength, not just an ethic that they held and they pursued, but a moment-to-moment way of life that walked the walk of what they believed in most deeply.
And they had a lot of guts, right? I mean, they were down in Selma, but so were you guys. They were at the Washington Monument, but so were you guys. There were some people, and look, people got killed. We know they did. And, you know, and maimed and hit on the head. But he was unafraid of that, wasn't he?
Well, you know, with Pete, it was different for him because he was pursued and actually convicted.
Indeed, he was
under the blacklist and brought up before the House on American Activities. He never did go to jail, but he would have gone to jail if they had pursued it and followed through on it the way they threatened to. And we never faced that kind of, you know, horror show of what has now looked upon as one of the great eras of judicial travesty and legislative tragedy, you know, coming from our nation. And it destroyed the Weavers. It did. They were broken up. Their huge success with Zaina, 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 and Goodnight Irene, huge hits, would have created the folk renaissance of the 50s long before it occurred, you know, you know, a decade later, when Peter, Paul, and Mary, and, you know, John Baez, and Judy Collins, and Bob Dylan, and many others, you know, brought that forward. And so, Pete was compelled to search for work, and he did a lot of summer camp appearances.
That's where I first saw him.
Ironically, really brought about a whole generation of young folk singing idealists who grew into a large body of advocates for the things, for justice and for peace and idealists. So you know, in a strange way, the fact that they were blacklisted and he was constrained in that way gave him a huge reach with the next generation.
It did, and I know that we've been told you have other things that you got to do, Peter, but you've been here so much, and we love you, and we just appreciate so much for your coming out today with us, and we'll see you soon, okay?
It's a great privilege to speak to you about Pete.
Okay.
Always will be.
Thanks,
Go
Peter.
Well, and thank you for pursuing this, my friend.
Thanks, bye. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to let's take a break and we'll have a little underwriting and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC goes from St. Joseph's School, Uptown Kingston, an academy of arts and sciences offering pre-K, elementary, and middle school placements for fall 2014. Daily tours of our historic Uptown campus, joyful learning guided by faith, stjosephschoolkingston.com. Stories Nursery, Freehold, New York, featuring houseplants, seeds, and seedling starter kits, open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m., closed Sundays, a gardener's destination, storiesnursery.com. And Proctor is presenting Broadway actress Kristen Chenoweth, Sunday, February 9th at 7 p.m., proctors.org for tickets.
De donde crece la palma, y antes de morir me...
And we are back on this very special Vox Pop. It's a two-hour-long one. We're down to the last 40 minutes. We have special guests, but we also have you. And let's go, and you're a special guest. Let's go to Court in Massachusetts. Okay, Court, you're on.
Okay, thank you. Nice to be on with you, Alan. So I just wanted to remember a time when I played with the group Bright Morning Star.
Uh-huh.
And we toured for many years around the country doing the same kind of circuit that Pete and Woody had done, you know, movement groups and benefit concerts. And in 1983, we went to do a series of concerts with Pete. And it was for the Nuclear Weapons Freeze campaign, especially for the Ohio Freeze campaign. And we got to Columbus and were introduced by Governor Dick Celeste, who said that he was there and that he and his wife Dagmar had met talking about nuclear disarmament at some kind of an event. And he was welcoming Pete back to Ohio after he and the Weavers had been formally canceled from their 1951 State Fair concert that was really the onset of the blacklist for the Weavers and for Pete. And we did that concert, and it was an amazing event. And then afterwards, the governor asked us back to the governor's mansion so that he and the concert organizers and Bright Morning Star and Pete could sort of hang out. He had known Pete. He had met him first when Pete came to India, and Dick Celeste, as a young politician just out of college, had gotten one of his first jobs, I believe, as an attaché in the embassy there, and had met Pete when Pete came to India for some reason, which I don't know what it was. But he was really happy to invite us all back to the governor's mansion. And then there were so many people there, and Pete got out his banjo and started singing.
Hello? Uh-oh, something happened. What happened?
I don't know, is that...
Okay. Hey, we Court, I'm so sorry. You've got to end it up because we have a very wonderful person coming on who we want to get on because we can't afford to wait. So you want to end this? Tell us how the story ended?
Excuse me?
Can you end this? In other words, is there something you'd like to end, bring this all
together? Yes, I would. I'm getting all kinds of weird sound. But so what happened was that we're back at the governor's mansion and people were inviting him to sing songs. And he sang so many different songs from so many different areas, from so many different movements. And it was remarkable that it was like he was a living history of musical history.
He sure was. You know, Court, at one point he took his family on a sabbatical for a year. Pete disappeared. He went around the world. He brought his family with him, and it was quite something. And then he came back, and he was as popular as ever. Hey, Court, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. No,
okay, very well.
You don't have that? We do. Okay, Court, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks.
Okay. All right, and now we are very lucky to have one of the great friends of WAMC. Okay, and we thought we had somebody extraordinary, as you are all extraordinary for sharing these stories with us, and we appreciate it ever so much. And the number here is 1-800-348-2551. Let me just say that all the phones have been lit up for this entire time. Let me tell you why, because no one owned Pete Seeger. Pete Seeger had every best friend. We were all his best friend, and people met him on a train, or people met him walking, or people protested with him, or they met him at Carnegie Hall, or they met him at Arlo's Church. Wherever it was, you know, Pete was the omnipresent person, and he had a billion friends, and it's that simple. So if anybody comes up to you and says, you know, I know Pete better than you do, forget it. We're not playing that. You got her? No. So, you know, that's something to talk about. Okay, let's go to Marcia in Albany. Marcia, I warn you, you're on, but at the risk of having to go somewhere else right now. So go ahead, Marcia, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, make it fast. Go ahead.
Oh, very fast. Back to 1953, summer camp, University Settlement Camp.
Yep.
Lower East Side.
Pete's
in
father-in-law.
New York.
Yep.
The poor children went for free, and I was a camper. Pete Seeger at that time with the Weavers were being blacklisted.
Yep.
And they played a few nights a week at the camp to assembly of children after dinner. Just wanted to tell you that it had a tremendous effect on me, as I'm sure it did everyone else. A number of things. The love of traditional music, the fact that people singing along can overcome adversity and have a sense of community. Music and the few words he said and the other Weavers said evenings about justice and equality and the way the world should work gave folks in the room a real sense of political and social justice.
Sure.
Has carried over, I think, to many people like myself for all these years, and we've talked to our children about it. It was a life well lived.
Yep,
and he will be sorely missed.
And Toshi's father, I think, was the caretaker.
That's correct.
Yes, at the University Settlement, and I think it's probably why they ended up in Beacon.
Probably that's true.
Yeah,
but it was a wonderful time and a bad time, but it certainly taught a lot of us about how government should not work.
You bet. You're so right. Thanks so much for being
with
us. Yeah.
Bye.
Okay. Matthew in D.C. Okay, Matthew, you're up.
Hi. Briefly, I was back from. Not me. I'm still here.
No, I'm. Can I hear you?
I can hear you, but there's something in the background.
Okay, go ahead.
Anyhow, I was back from college, you know, winter break in Huntington, Long Island, and it was Harry Chapin, Tom Chapin, Pete Seeger, and they were playing at Huntington High School in an intimate concert. Hello.
Yeah. Okay. Listen. I'm so sorry, Matt. Hang on. We're gonna be going to Natalie Merchant now, and if I can, if technologically it's possible, we'll come back to you. Okay.
I welcome the opportunity to open for her.
Okay. Here we go. Natalie, are you there? I can't hear. What? No. Line three. Okay. Line three. Natalie, are you there?
I'm here, Alan.
Wonderful. We love you, Natalie. That's all I'm going to say. You played at Toshi's memorial service. A few months later, here we are with Pete. What do you make of it?
Well, you know, we've had a long time to prepare for today. And, you know, even for the last 10 years, every time I've seen Pete, I've told myself, I better savor this. This could be the last time. And then I see him again. And I would see him again and again. And so even though that's the last time I saw him at the memorial, I was convinced I would see him again.
What did he mean to you?
He meant so much. I mean, to thousands, millions of people. But I think those of us who live in the Hudson Valley felt a special connection to him because we shared a home with him. I mean, the very first time I met Pete was I was waiting for the train at Cold Spring, and we were the only two on the platform, and we started talking, and we ended up sitting together on the train to the city. And this is when I was 25 years old.
Whoa.
So he means integrity. He means authenticity. egalitarianism, populism. He means the preservation of American folk music. He means setting the bar so high for what public figures should do for their communities. You know, and I'll never forget in that first conversation I had with Pete on the train, he said, well, if you're planning to be a musician, you're going to be a rover, but you should really find a place that is that you can call home and make that your community and devote yourself to your community. And I really took that to heart, even at that young age.
You know, you did a wonderful film, you and a group of others, Dear Governor Cuomo, and it's about fracking. Pete appeared in it.
We went to Pete's house to film that because he had put his back out.
The most amazing quote that I think I've ever heard from Pete. Can you tell us about it?
Well, we wanted Pete to speak because we wanted him to speak at the event in Albany because he was there on the front lines in the very beginning of the fight to not allow fracking in New York State. And like I said, his back was out, so he couldn't make it to Albany, but he said, come on over to the house and I'll film a statement for you. And he said that Andrew Cuomo, your father, was one of the greatest governors this state has ever had. But if you allow fracking, and I'm paraphrasing, you could perhaps be remembered as the worst.
I think you're almost exactly word for word right.
and he looked straight to camera, and I said, if I wouldn't want to be haunted by the ghost of Pete Seeger, you know, that's a pretty heavy, and you know, heavy address.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's really quite something. The whole thing, the whole history of this man,
You know, big life.
Just unbelievable. It really is. As I've said, Natalie, I only had one hero in life, and he's it, you know, and there was no number two. I mean, he was just extraordinary. And he knew that he made mistakes. That's what I loved about him the most.
He was so humble.
Yeah. Yeah.
In spite of his titanic stature, you know, in other people's eyes, he was still so humble and so, unassuming.
Yeah.
And also, you know, the music business is so full of narcissism and creation of spectacle. And he was the antithesis of that. And, that, you know, those of us who are musicians really have him to be thankful for, you know, for just giving us that example of, as I said before, authenticity. He was just 100% Pete Seeger at all times.
Authenticity and integrity. Natalie, as I've said to you many times, we love you and we honor you and we think you're the best we have. And we thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you for memorializing him so well today.
Okay,
dear. He deserves it.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and now we go to, I suppose it's Victor in Westerlo. Okay, Victor, no, is Victor still on? Who was on before? Well, we don't know. Okay, was somebody still on? Hello? No. Okay, let's go to Victor in Westerlo. Victor, you're on.
Yeah, hi. I'm a banjo player like you, Alan. I learned around 1970. And I started out trying to play bluegrass banjo and realized I didn't like it so much. So I started listening to Pete's brother Mike with the New Orleans City Ramblers, and I kind of got hooked on that. And then I realized, well, Pete's got a style that's different from either of those.
Absolutely.
I started listening to him, and I realized that what he has is freedom. He represents freedom to do what you want and not have to abide by somebody else's standards. And I think his whole life represents that.
Yeah. No, that's true. You know, we all went to the New Law City Rambler, performances, and we all went to hear Pete every time he was at Carnegie Hall, or Town Hall, or wherever he was. And, Arlo kept that up for all of those years afterwards. Every Thanksgiving, there was Arlo doing what Pete and the Weavers had started all those years before. How to play the five-string banjo. And just the other day, two of my kids came to see me, and they said, can you teach us how to play the banjo? And I said, sure. All you got to know is bum diddy. a pick with the index finger, brush it down, and hit that fifth string, and then you got bum diddy bum diddy bum diddy. And he taught us all, you know, how to do that, and it was some style, wasn't it, Victor?
Yeah, well, I think he taught us that there are different ways of doing the bum diddy too.
Yeah, well, there's frailing, which is the opposite. In other words, you hit down with your finger, and
yep.
then you brush down with the back of your hand, and then you hit the fifth string. It's still bum diddy though.
Oh, yeah. Well, I bum diddy by pulling up with my finger.
That's
you get the same basic...
sure. No, that's what I meant. The first one, yeah. The first time is the upward pull, and then the frailing is down. Hey, Victor, thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Let's go to Bill in Johnstown. Bill, you're on.
Hi. One thing about Pete, above and beyond everything else, I think, is he was a doer, whether it was building his house, building a boat, getting involved on a street corner in Beacon on a Saturday morning. He was a doer. And one of the last things he did was, and this was a job for him because it was hard for him to move around at the end, but in September, as Joe knows, he showed up at the Farm Aid concert in Saratoga.
Yep, he did.
And the only reason, and I was involved in that to some extent, so I know the behind-the-scenes thing, but the only reason he went there was not for the crowd and to be part of something big, but he went so he could... sing the verse to Woody's song about fracking. And people should Google YouTube Farm Aid Pete Seeger. And maybe, Joe, you can repeat that
Joe's actually not sitting here right now, but yes,
okay.
I'm sure he'll get the message.
Yeah,
right.
That's the coolest video. It shows Pete at the Farm Aid concert singing about fracking.
Yeah.
And one thing I'm sure Pete would love is, for all of us, he thought fracking was such a danger for the future of New York. And if everybody can take his message and get involved in that and defeat it in his memory, New York may be a leader in the whole world in this thing.
Bill, thank you for the wonderful call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Let us go to Tara in Tilson, I guess it is. Tara?
Yes. Oh, on. Let me tell you, this means so much to me. And, life and death has been, everyone deals with it. And I have a place in my heart for Pete Seeger that I started in 1984 when I met him, and we made stone soup. And Pete Seeger just drilled in me my sense of community, my sense of freedom, integrity, grit and drive, just social justice. He taught me about the land, the environment, that it's my home, and I have to treat it like Mother Nature. And I got to introduce him to my daughter 2 years ago, and that is the happiest thing for me, that she got to meet him. And I'm going to teach her everything that Pete Seeger taught to me. And when I heard that he passed away this morning at 4 a.m., the first thing I thought of, Alan, was you, because I know you are so close to him. And I have to say... that if I have one hero in this life, and I hope my grandmother's not listening because it might be her, it's Pete Seeger.
You bet.
And I hope this next fun drive is over within an hour, and everyone needs to stand up and think of Pete Seeger and do the right thing.
Yeah.
And Alan, you're the next in line.
No,
and you mean almost as much to me as Pete Seeger does, and I understand what you've done for our community, and you've taught me how to treat and believe in my government and my community, and... you and your station and your beliefs mean a lot to me. And I know we don't know each other, but you're in my heart. And when I met Pete Seeger when I was a little kid, he treated me like I was just one of his family.
Yeah.
And when I introduced my daughter to him 2 years ago, he didn't know my name. He didn't know me. He didn't remember me, but he treated me like, hey, Tara, there you are again. And he met my daughter. He sang to her.
That's great.
And it's beauty. And everyone has said so many beautiful words that I can repeat. It's all for Pete Seeger, and he's in my heart, and he is us.
Well,
and thank you, Alan.
Tara, thank you for your wonderful words, and don't make me cry. Okay.
Oh, I'm already crying for you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, okay. We are going, let's see, I want to talk to the producers and to find out whether we should talk to Happy before the break or after the break. Before the break. Okay. The great Happy Traum, one of the best guys in the world, as far as I'm concerned, in folk music, and the former publisher of Sing Out magazine, a friend of Pete's. Let's go to Happy. Happy, are you there?
I'm here, Alan.
Well, we love talking to you. You're just a hero of all of ours. And tell us your memories of Pete.
Well, you know, I think I'm just one of tens of thousands of young. I was one of the kids who were inspired by Pete to pick up a guitar, a banjo, or any instrument, whatever, and just make music. I think you and you were certainly one of those too.
Not as good as you were, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, but it didn't matter. That was the thing about Pete. It didn't matter whether you were good or not good. It was the whole idea of participating in something, of being part of a bigger picture of a whole of people getting together and expressing ideas and expressing music and history. And you know, he just showed us that it doesn't have to be a profession. You don't have to be a genius or a you don't have to be a virtuoso on an instrument. All you have to do is love what you're doing and engage other people in it. And he just did that through his entire life. It was remarkable. And when I started out, I mean, I didn't think I was ever going to play music. I was a failed piano student. I couldn't get past teaching little fingers to play or something, whatever it was. But when I heard Pete for the first time in concert, I just said, "I can do this. I'm getting the guitar. I'm gonna do it." So he's, you know, very much responsible for everything for me personally that's come later. And it's just been a huge thing. I mean, I was thinking that even meeting Jane, who's been my wife and partner and friend for, you know, 50 more or more years, more than 50 years, that, you know, we've been together and we met through folk music, and I wouldn't have gotten into folk music if it wasn't for Pete. And so that's one of my memories. The other thing I should mention, because it was just a story, because it makes me so proud, is that about 10 or 12 years ago, we got a phone call from Pete at our office at Homespun Tapes, where we make instructional stuff. And Pete said, "I want you guys to be the publishers of my How to Play the Five-String Banjo book, because I like what you're doing so much." And now this is a book that I learned from when I was a teenager sitting in the apartment in the Bronx, and you probably learned from the same thing. It was a mimeograph sheet at that point.
Yeah, I did.
And so we worked with Pete and became the publisher of that book, and I can't tell you how proud it made us that he made that call to us. And you know, it's just one of those things where the circle came all the way around, full 360 degrees around. And, you know, it's thrilling to me to be part of that. And we've been in contact with Pete about reprints of the book and updates just until, you know, weeks ago. He was still engaged. He was still wanting to fix this photograph or write little extra things because this address had changed. And, you know, like, he was working on thinking about these things until he couldn't think about them anymore. I mean, which is very, very recently.
I'm going to tell a story which will embarrass you, but I'll tell it anyway. At the Pete Seeger birthday party a couple of years back. There was everybody paying homage. Madison Square Garden, place filled up. Pete comes over. I happen to know this is the case. Pete comes over. You know, he was in some ways a shy man. Comes over, grabs Happy, who we are talking to now, Happy Traum, and takes him and sits him down and talks to him about Homespun Tapes and how these local businesses are the look of the future or ought to be, and Happy, with everybody else around, to do honor to Pete. It was Happy that he chose to talk to. What about that, Happy?
That's right. Well, it was, you know, we were standing backstage and there were 20,000 people still singing "Goodnight, Irene" in the hall. And you know, that wasn't what, I mean, I'm sure Pete was thrilled that everybody was singing, but he immediately switched his focus to something that was local and small and, you know, not this gigantic thing with all these big rock stars, Bruce Springsteen and Dave Matthews and all these big stars that were there. You know, I mean, that was a fantastic tribute to him. But then he suddenly switched his focus to the small guy, you know, and to me, that was just wonderful. And he immediately brought Jane and me back into his dressing room, and there were people, you know, people all around, and we had to say hi to Toshi, and, you know, it was just thrilling. The whole day, the whole evening was thrilling, but that was really special to me, too.
Yeah, you know.
So, you know, Pete, you know, he's always just meant so much to us. Sure. on so many different levels.
Well, when we were reaching out to people this morning, I said, get happy.
Yeah.
Because
the other thing I was
so
thinking
much, yeah.
Before you called, the other thing I was thinking about Pete was that he was the authentic Pete everywhere he was. He was the most authentic Pete you could be, whether he was on stage at Carnegie Hall or Madison Square Garden or in your living room or at the Clearwater Revival or, you know, anywhere. You never got anything other than Pete. He didn't change. You know, if he was talking to you or talking to somebody he didn't know, he was, as you say, a little bit shy and a little retiring. As soon as he got started talking, he'd give you ideas, stories, mm-hmm. history, to-do lists, suggestions, what you have to do now. You know, get out there and, you know, build a bridge or, you know, whatever. He would always have these incredible ideas. You know, and look what he accomplished with that kind of a mind. I mean, just never stopped until he just couldn't go on anymore. And we're so saddened by his passing, but we feel like he did his job so well, and we're so grateful to him.
Well, couldn't have been better said. Happy Traum, Happy and Jane. What can I say except how grateful we are that you've joined us today. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure, Alan. Thanks to you, too. Bye-bye.
Okay, so now we're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC goes on Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock. Organic produce, weight loss, and immune support supplements working to help maintain winter health. Since 1978, Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. And The Linda, presenting Food for Thought, Nothing Like Chocolate, Thursday, February 20th at 7 p.m., thelinda.org.
Here we are. We're back. This has been a wonderful afternoon for me personally. We've been expanded 2-hour Vox Pop in honor of our Pete, and we're just so happy everybody's been with us. Let me go to Matthew, who we promised we'd come back to, and somehow we didn't. Matthew, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you so much, Alan. My condolences to you and all of those who were really close to Pete, and he was threaded throughout your lives.
I think we were all close to Pete, Matt. I really do. I think it was everybody. I mean, that's what made the guy so remarkable, but go ahead.
Well, my particular little story was I was a Ute, and I was, of course, into Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin, and I had an opportunity at Huntington High School to see Harry Chapin, Tom Chapin, and Pete Seeger on a cold, blustery night in an intimate setting. And, of course, it was that wonderful glow and energy from Pete that brought the whole small audience together and into sing-alongs. And they ended with a song called All My Life's a Circle.
Yep, know it well.
And it reverberated throughout the snowfall outside as I basically walked home. And 30 years later, I'm in Washington, D.C., and I'm at a small show at the Birchmere. There, Pete Seeger is doing a tribute to Woody Guthrie. And I had talked to him after the show, and he perked up when I told him about that show. And he thanked me for reminding him about Harry and that show and thanked me for sharing. And I told him I was still humming All My Life's a Circle 30 years later.
Isn't that great?
And he said, keep doing that. You can't go wrong.
Matthew, thank you for calling back, and thanks for staying with us. It was a wonderful story. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, let's go to Malcolm in Massachusetts. Malcolm, you're on.
Good afternoon, Alan.
Hey.
Thank you so much for doing this today.
Not at all.
I wanted to call up and just kind of share. So, you know, it's a lot like what some of the other folks have said, but I never met Pete personally myself in person, but I certainly feel, as I think many people do, that somehow I knew him.
Great. I love that.
And it really feels, you know, in that same way, like there is that kind of a, you know, a loss of someone who I actually knew. And, you know, just to get to more of, you know, a little bit of a short my story with it, you know, as a kid, one of the first albums that my folks ever got me was like folk songs, which had a whole bunch of different folks, but including Pete Seeger, and then an album of Pete Seeger that had the Abba Yo-Yo story.
Yep.
And a couple other things. And so I just remember him from, you know, one of the earliest voices, one of the kindest voices in my head, you know, from just from way, way back. And so, you know, what has inspired me about him even more so over the years is, you know, his ability to speak truth to power is just, it's right up there. I mean, I think of him as, you know, somewhere on the spectrum between Gandhi and John Lennon, and just, you know, they're all up there, the idea, and well, just to wrap it up, you know, I want to thank the WAMC family. I can tell I was inspired when I learned, and it made a lot of sense that he was your hero too, Alan. And you all mean so much to me, just like he does, in terms of speaking truth to power and being there for more than just, you know, the self, for being there for the group and the community.
He was
a very
courageous man.
He was.
Hey, Malcolm, thanks for this great call.
Thank
I swore
you, Alan.
I wasn't going to start getting wet in the eyes, but you're helping along. Thanks a lot.
Well, love to all of you.
Okay,
thank you.
Let's go to Mary from Poughkeepsie. Mary from Poughkeepsie, you're on.
Hi, thank you, Alan. Years ago, when I first moved to the Hudson Valley, I went to a Pete Seeger concert, and he left his banjo on the stage when he took a break. And I just had to go over and look at it. I couldn't believe he just left it there. And there was this most beautiful inscription on it. And I know it had something to do about eradicating hatred or whatever. I just wondered if you remember what that inscription was.
Well, you know that Woody Guthrie on his guitar had something. These are not the exact words, but "this machine kills fascists." And Pete's had more to do with the more positive side about love around, you know, love for everyone. But this machine kills hate or something like that. I think that's what
I just remember it was so beautiful, and
yeah.
I always wanted to remember it. And I saw there was a piece on TV this morning, you know, talking about his death, which is just a sad thing. And I could see part of it.
I got it now. Somebody just handed it to me. "This machine surrounds hate and forces it to surrender." Is that great or what?
Beautiful. He was a beautiful man. Thank you so much for taking my call and for all you do.
No, and thank you. Thanks for being there. Okay.
Bye.
Let's go to George in Albany. George in Albany, you're on.
Great show, and of course everyone thinks of you when this happened, and what a great friend and admirer you were. But I'm a music teacher. I work at a school called the Robert C. Parker School.
Oh, sure.
And music is a very important part, and as is the peace movement, and Pete Seeger is a big important part. And on every Friday we have assembly, and we're going to be dedicating our assembly. We sing at every assembly, and everyone in the school sings in the morning, and we'll be doing some great Pete songs and talking about Pete's life. And I try to tell the kids that the folk music phenomena, everybody came and everyone participated. You weren't just there to be entertained. You were there to sing and be part of the entertainment, to be part of the show, not just as a audience member. You know, everyone chipped in, everyone sang, everyone participated. So,
as Pete said on the Weavers record, if your neighbor isn't singing, kick him in the ribs and get him singing too.
That's great. And I'm old enough that I remember I had 45 Pete Seeger.
Oh, sure. As I said this morning, they were in her house.
My mother loved folk music, and you know, everything. You know, the Kingston Trio, sure, and New Christy Minstrels, and the whole folk you know, it was just part of the phenomenon. And Pete was sort of the godfather of it all. And
George, you are so right. I'm trying to get everybody in. I appreciate the call. I just got a couple of more minutes, and I want to make sure everybody gets a chance. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan. Great show. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Langley. I guess it's Langley in New York. Is it Langley?
Yes, that's me. I did not even know of his passing until I was listening on the radio to you, and I'm so sad about that. But when I have a son who is working on a photo documentary to abolish the death penalty, and he had an appointment with Pete at a festival, and take his picture holding this sign. And when it was over, Pete was like, well, I got to find a ride home. And we thought, you know, somebody just dropped him off there. I couldn't believe it. So we said, well, we'll take you home. So he put his banjo and guitar in the trunk of his own Volkswagen, which ran on vegetable oil.
That's
which
right.
We love. And we took him home, and my son got to take a photo of him holding the abolished death penalty while standing in front of the cabin that he built with his own hands, you know, years and years ago.
Do you know that 100,000 people say they helped Pete build that that cabin? It's really pretty funny. I keep meeting people who say, yeah, you know, I was up there, I was helping him build that. So,
And he says that he became more of a song leader than a singer because he kind of lost his voice, but all he had to do was sing the first line and everybody else took it from there.
That's true. That's absolutely true. And that's why he sang up to the very end. It'd always be everybody knew the songs. Hey, I'm trying to get everybody in. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Okay, let's go to Peter in East Greenbush. Peter, you're on.
Hey, thanks. I was not prepared to hear about Pete's death today, but
Peter, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to. We only have a couple of minutes here. The great banjo player Bella Fleck is on. So can you do it? Can you do it in one sentence? Go ahead. Do it in one sentence.
Yeah, it was 50 years ago in kindergarten when Peter played for us in a elementary school gym, and I'll always thank him for that first exposure.
That's terrific, Peter. Okay, Bella Fleck on the phone. Bella, are you there?
Yeah, hey, it's Bela. How you
doing? Bela, I guess I've always had it wrong. I certainly know how good you are, and one of the best banjo players in the world. Saw you at Madison Square Garden with Tony and Pete and the whole gang. What are your memories? We only have a minute or two here. What are your memories of Pete?
I'm hearing a tone in my ear.
Okay, here we go. Now, how about this? Any better? No.
I'm hearing an operator in my ear. You want to try me back?
No, because we're off the air. Off the air in a second, but we can't tell you how much we appreciate your calling and your being out there and carrying on the tradition. It's just great, Bela. Thank you so much.
Okay, man.
Yeah,
sure.
Bye.
Hey, I can try now.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, no, there's all kinds of crazy sounds going on in my ear.
We're sorry. We have a crack engineering staff here. They know how to do it. Thank you very much. Hello.
Okay, I love Pete Seeger. Take care, guys.
Right. Anyway, we are just about out of time now. Thanks to everybody who called in and all of you who have, you know, a Pete Seeger memory or a Pete Seeger story. And we apologize to Ruth and to Eileen who are left on the line. It's really sad not to get everybody in. But you all understand, we try our best. I also want to thank Noel Stuckey, Roger McGinn, Tony Trischka, Peter Yarrow, Natalie Merchant, and Happy Traum, and Bill Fleck for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from the Honest Weight Food Co-op, located at 100 Waterville Avenue in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWeight.coop. And Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 3rd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. Rock the Ridge 50.org for registration. And Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, QFCC.com. Okay, everybody, thanks again for joining us on the Vox Pop. Remember, the conversation continues online at WAMC.org. You got anything to say about Pete? We'll put it right up there. Everybody can read it. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Bruce Herbach and Diane Buckley. Is that true? No. Thanks to Ian Pickus and Sarah LaDuke in the newsroom. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. Stay tuned now for a news update. You in my dream. Last Saturday night I got married. Me and my wife settled down. Now me and my wife are parting. I'm gonna take another stroll.